Previously on X-Men.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Uncanny Trek's continuing coverage of X-Men 97. We have somewhat put our grief behind us, although we miss our dear beloved Gambit, and we are open to starting a Gambit religion to remember it. But we've put that behind us. I've put my rage about the deaths of Banshee and Moira and Emma Frost holding hands with Sebastian Shaw. I put my rage behind me. And we're moving on to episode 6, Life Death Part 2. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Matt, how are you feeling today?
I'm okay, Bob. I will say this. If Gambit has disciples, we're going to call them the Thieves Guild.
The Thieves Guild. If only Disciple had a T in it that we could drop.
Yeah.
That's, or rather, if it only had an H in it, we could drop. Disciples. We're the disciples of Gambit.
Well, Bob, we're here,
that hard C.
We're here with Life Death Part 2, Bob. Life Death Part 1 was half an episode, and it shared it with the episode with it, the other piece, which was called Motendo. Okay?
Yeah.
So, and yeah. I understand why now. Motendo was made, it was made very clear that was a separate piece to Life Death Part 1.
And I'm remembering correctly that it didn't intercut. It was, you did Motendo, then you did Life Death Part 1, right?
Correct. You did not do that with Life Death Part 2, even though there were two different stories taking place.
They easily could have done it, right? I'm not sure what you would have called the Professor X side of it, but you easily could have done the same thing. Although, I don't know if... I actually liked Life Death Part 2 quite a bit, the Storm and Forge parts. I actually thought they were pretty good.
Yes.
But I don't know if it would have worked as a separate episode within the episode, if that makes sense. I think it needed to be intercut with the Xavier narrative.
I believe it did, because there's just a lot of parallelism there, Bob. There's a lot with those stories. Whereas when you had Motendo, where you have all that nostalgia heroin going into your system with the video games, and then...
That would have been a weird...
It would have been weird to cross over then to Storm losing her powers. And
It was already a weird juxtaposition to begin with. And
yes.
They'd been intercutting between Motendo and Life Death Part 1. That would have been very strange.
So, good call on their part. Great call on their part.
Yeah. So I guess to begin very early, to begin in the recap, I'd totally forgotten that the adversary had bitten and that the bite had infected Forge's shoulder. So that was a big cliffhanger, I guess, we were left with at the end of Life Death Part 1. And that just had flew right by me until I saw the recap.
It flew right by you like an owl, Bob. Yes, it did. Just flew right by.
Like an owl. Yeah. Like an owl. But at least it didn't bite and infect my shoulder like an owl.
See, I didn't remember the bite either, which makes me think they didn't do a very good job of making that attack seem significant. I'm assuming Forge got attacked and then... I don't know. I probably need to go back and rewatch it, sadly.
Although, I mean, we're, in a way, it's weird. We're not the ideal consumers for this, right? Because at least I'm taking notes and watching the screen. Right? So it, sometimes stuff doesn't land for me like it should.
Yeah, yeah. But I'll probably go back. When the whole season's done, I'll probably do a full rewatch. And then I'll note it there. But big deal in this episode, Bob. Nightcrawler got his own name in the stars. In the intro.
Yeah. So no Magneto, no Gambit.
But Nightcrawler.
But plenty of Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler didn't appear in the episode, though, which was really weird. But whatever.
I guess the implication is, though, that he will be in the team going forward, or at least he could be in the team for an episode or two going forward.
They're just letting us know that they did not kill Nightcrawler. That's it. Because we thought maybe Nightcrawler could have died on Genosha, maybe. But he's not dead, and maybe he will be a mainstay on the team. I'd love that.
Yeah, well, and especially with Gambit and Magneto gone, I mean, that's always been, overbooking the X-Men roster has always been a concern, but I feel like there's room for Nightcrawler, at least for a bit.
Yeah, Bob's next man up, get him up there, Gambit's gone, stick Nightcrawler in his place, move along, X-Men Adventures.
So, Matt, we mentioned this in our coverage, Episode 5, since our grief caused us to record Episode 5 late, but did you catch the shot of X-Factor in the opening credits?
I did, and man, that every time I see Havoc's suit, God, that is the most 90s suit ever. It's so hard to look at. But anyway, yeah, they zoom in on Forge, So I'm thinking they just wanted to let us know that Forge was the leader of X-Factor.
Yeah, or maybe they're going to work X-Factor in a little bit. Like I said in the last episode, I don't think we're going to have an X-Factor spinoff, but which would be sad. That'd make me happy. But yeah, I don't know. It does seem between the picture and Life Death 1 and the shot here, they're teasing something, it seems.
And I will say Cold Comfort is one of those episodes that people love. Just because there's so many cameos and mutants in it that I think
kind of like the Nightcrawler episode, right?
Right. It's one of those that you remember from when you were a kid watching it. At least I do, because it just was always special when it came out, because I knew I could see so many mutants I was never going to see again until X-Men 97 dropped.
Thank you, X-Men 97. And if you want to see our coverage of Cold Comfort, join us on Patreon at Uncanny Treks, and you can go back and find our coverage of Cold Comfort along with Young Justice.
All right. One other little cameo in the entrance, Bob. Nimrod is standing inside of Master Mold.
Okay. I think I saw Nimrod, but I didn't remember that he was in Master Mold.
When Nimrod and Master Mold combine, don't they form this character called Bastion or something?
Oh, man. You're shaming me. I think Bastion is different, though. Okay. He is Sentinel adjacent and mutant racist, but I don't think he's exactly the same. Although it's been a few years since I've read Operation Zero Tolerance, and it's been a few years since I've read the 2000s X-Men, so maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think that's Bastion's deal.
There's speculation going around that Bastion may be a big bad in this. Just throwing it out there. We've seen pictures. Yeah. We have seen little Easter egg. There was a picture where he was actually in he was in a photograph with, what was the doctor that Mystique was... I want to say Kevorkian, but that's just 90s suicide.
Yeah, that's the Dutch.
That's a real man. I'm thinking of a fake person that Mystique was. The doctor she played in the Archangel episode. There was a shot or something of him in a picture with that guy, and you could barely see him. And then there was apparently a walk-by of Bastion in the episode where Genosha's destroyed, episode 5. So, I mean, there's some hints. I don't know. It's all speculation.
Well, Matt, I was looking to confirm that Bastion's first appearance was before Operation Zero Tolerance, which it was. And on the Google result for the Bastion Wikipedia article, but although interestingly not in the first line of the Wikipedia article itself, which is strange, but it does describe Bastion as a mystical fusion of Master Mold and Nimrod.
Ah, someone looked up Bastion on Wikipedia before he started this episode to make sure that he knew some idea.
Yeah.
I don't know that much about the character.
I wonder, that's the first thing under abilities. I do wonder when that was revealed.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know much about the character. Yeah. I had to research him because people were speculating. I don't know who Bastion is. I went and researched it, looked it up, and then I was like, oh, Nimrod and Master Mold. And here's Nimrod standing inside Master Mold. That seems a little...
Yeah, and it would be interesting if they're moving to a mid-90s crossover that wasn't really covered by X-Men 92, Operation Zero Tolerance. That's interesting.
That would be pretty cool. But Bob, moving past the entrance, it's so funny.
Thing to say to transition in. So I did catch the Shi'ar in the opening credits, right? We see the Imperial Guard in this opening credits. But I was still very surprised, given that this was Life Death Part 2, very surprised that our actual opening fight, we've got Deathbird, we've got Cyclops' little brother, Vulcan, and then we've got the Imperial Guard, and they're just wrecking Ronan the Accuser and the Kree.
I nerded out so bad when we saw Ronan, because we just talked about him in Hickman's Fantastic Four run, where he played a huge role.
And we just saw him give up his marriage to Crystal, which was actually pretty affecting.
I have a lot more respect for Ronan. If you only know him from whatever movie he was in the Marvel Universe.
I think he was the villain in the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
Something like that, yeah. Whatever he was, it doesn't do him justice. But yeah, Ronan the Accuser is awesome. The other character you talked about, Deathbird, Lalandra's sister... Only reason I know her very well is because I have taken her out so many times in the X-Men Sega Genesis game. She's one of the first villains, and you just keep jump kicking over and over and over and over again. I do like that Roman the Accuser calls her a pigeon, the worst of the birds.
Rats with wings, baby. Yes. Rats with wings.
And then Vulcan is the third Summers brother. Is he going to ever find out?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Maybe in season 2 or season 3.
And do they have a good story for that? Has there ever been a good story with Vulcan in it, Bob?
I think it's semi-controversial, but the story that ran just before where you're going, and I didn't tell you to read it because it's not relevant, because you're currently reading Messiah Complex on your own.
That is correct, yes.
But there's a story in the run-up to Messiah Complex, although it doesn't directly feed into Messiah Complex, as I remember. It's called Rise and Fall of the Shi'ar Empire. And it's a 12-part story that Brubaker wrote. And not everybody likes it, but I really like it. I think it's a good 12 issue run.
Yeah, I'm currently on Messiah Complex, but also just to give support for this episode, Bob, so that I could have a better understanding of the comic connection, I did read the Life Death trade paperback. So I'll talk a little bit about that towards the end, or when it fits in. But one other character I want to point out, Bob, Gladiator. They had a they had a really fun job choreographing Superman. That's all.
Yeah.
They literally gave him,
use him for
every Superman power. He had the super breath. Yep. He did the laser vision. He did that whole fast moving in front of somebody before they get shot thing that Superman always does. This is what if Superman was a humanoid alien that actually looked alien. That's what Gladiator is.
Yeah. Well, Matt, I do have to ask in a mournful tone, is this the closest I'm ever going to get to seeing another Legion of Superheroes cartoon?
No, Bob, I think you have a better chance now with James Gunn at the helm of DC animation movies, whatever the hell he's actually in charge of. I don't know. DC is
extended. All of it, is it?
Is it extended universe? All the DC. Yeah. He's in charge of everything. Yeah. Whatever it is. You may have a better chance because he tends to go for properties that are not as mainstream. And that's a that's one good thing about him. You're going to see some characters that aren't as familiar, which is good.
And I'm 50-50 on James Gunn. I like Guardians of the Galaxy, his three movies. I don't like Peacemaker, so I'm 50-50 on him.
I like most of James Gunn's stuff. I haven't really had a problem, but how he's going to handle the DC characters, that's all up in the air, and I'm waiting to really judge that after seeing the first film.
And just to say, if anybody lost the thread, so the Imperial Guard, the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, are the Marvel analogs to the League to the Legion of Superheroes, which was the team Superboy teams up with from the future. Great team. We did some coverage of, there's a two-season Legion cartoon from the late aughts, and we covered that with Star Trek Strange New Worlds in prior iterations of Uncanny Trek. So you can go back and listen to that if you feel so inclined.
Bob, would you watch a political space drama about the Shi'ar Empire?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
That would be cool.
I would probably want either Hickman or Al Ewing to write it, and I would love that. I mean, honestly, my dream, and there was strong rumors, strong rumors that Hickman was going to do this before he got offered X-Men, but I want Hickman to do Legion of Superheroes, and I in some ways I think I actually want him to make him a little more like the Shi'ar Imperial Guard, not all the way, bring in a little bit more moral ambiguity and a little bit more politics.
You want him hard. You want him. You don't want Bubble. No, what's his name? Bouncy Boy. You want Bouncy Boy to be dark, Bob. That's what you're saying. You want Bouncy Boy to be grim.
Honestly, Matt, I just want more Legion of Superheroes. So whatever form it takes, I will probably like it. I've liked most Legion comics that I've read. All right. One other thing I wanted to say about the Shi'ar is I did enjoy this version of Deathbird. I thought it was a good version of her, this character that Matt knows mostly from beating in the opening level of an X-Men game. And in the late 90s, they did have a whole run of Deathbird and Bishop hanging out in space together and killing people and being horny. And I think this version of Deathbird being horny with Bishop in space would be a good angle for a future season.
Okay, I want to throw out one more thing, Bob. I know about Deathbird. I love her costume, the color scheme.
It's a good costume.
The whole look. Make an action figure of that, somebody. We need a Deathbird action figure with that costume. You made a Goblin Queen. You made all these other random characters. Make Deathbird.
You haven't read Hickman's one trade of New Mutants, have you?
No.
Oh, man, it's so good. So it's relevant to X-Men 97. So it focuses on most of the traditional New Mutants with a couple of other characters. And Hickman, as you'll see in the Avengers run, loves Sunspot and Cannonball. He loves Bobby and Sam. And it has them going to the Shi'ar planet. And it has Bobby seeing Deathbird and falling in love with her because she's an evil, sexy space bird lady and spending the entire run trying to impress her and hit on her. It's so funny.
Now, see, I could see that. Yeah. I mean, she's a cool looking. She's really cool.
It's beautiful.
Looking. Yeah.
Matt, I'm not a furry, but an alien bird lady can get it.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. I mean, they called her a pigeon. I don't know. Is that the equivalent of a skank or something?
Maybe it's just a a cute little pet name. All right. What other Shi'ar thing? So I definitely, they've done plots where Xavier marries Lilandra before. But I think usually when they do that, it's Xavier is just a prince consort or something like that. So them framing it as Xavier marrying Lilandra and then becoming emperor, I think that's new.
Yeah, I have read nowhere near as much X-Men as you have, Bob, but I'm pretty sure Xavier as an emperor is new territory to me.
Yeah. Although it's not super clear. I mean, at the risk of being patriarchal, one usually assumes monarchies are patriarchal, right? Yeah. And so one usually assumes that the emperor would be over the empress. I'm not sure if that would be the case here, or I'm not sure if this version of the Shi'ar are supposed to be more matriarchal, or I'm not sure if it's supposed to be an equal partnership. I don't know. It's interesting to think about, but the episode doesn't give us, I don't think, a lot of material to go with. Likewise, I'm less certain about this. Oh, go ahead.
I think Lilandra, Bob, does have most of the control here, though, if you look at it. Xavier wants to go back home. She's, no, we're not doing that.
but once there's actually is a marriage and he actually is the emperor, would that be the same?
Yeah,
I tend to think it probably would, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, and he has to have his mind wiped too or whatever, so that's a whole different, I mean, that's the whole point of the story, so.
Yeah, although not initially, right? That's not initially part of the deal. It's just Deathbird makes it part of the deal. And then likewise, I'm less certain about this, but I feel Lilandra being telepathic is new. I mean, it makes sense.
It does.
But I feel it's new.
I mean, how was she reaching out to Xavier before that? Shi'ar technology?
I can't remember how it's framed in those original Phoenix Saga comics, but it felt more like it was Xavier's mind, her finding Xavier's mind than her reaching Xavier's mind, to put it, if that makes sense.
That does make sense, yeah, because, I mean, you could still reach out to a telepath but not be telepathic yourself, but then that telepath has to be actually seeking you. So, or wanting to answer your call.
Exactly. One more Hickman thing, Matt. Were you excited that we read John Hickman's Fantastic Four run together so that you could catch that the Shi'ar have horse slaves who are called Kymellians?
They are literal workhorses. That is so sad. They need to be freed so they can run wild. But this is what I'm saying. A political drama with all this world building, man, you could have some cool stuff. Just call it Shi'ar. Call it Shi'ar. That's got a nice name. Yeah. Shi'ar.
Yeah, it's because there's only been one Imperial Guard miniseries, and then there's been a couple of tie-in books that focus on the Shi'ar to various cosmic crossovers. But other than that, it's mostly just them showing up in X-Men, man.
Well Bob, at one point, Professor X is trying to... He wants to go and check on his X-Men. He misses his...
Mm-hmm.
So, Lilandra tells Professor X that returning...
So, Matt, are you telling me he wants to return to the Milky Way ghetto?
Yes, Bob. He would like to return to the Milky Way ghetto, which, ding, ding, Bob, that is our line for this episode that you cannot say anywhere else. Where can you get away with saying that? You live in a Milky Way ghetto.
Oh, Matt, that's easy. That's easy. You go into the store, there are no Milky Way candy bars, and you're like, what is this Milky Way ghetto? Man, you gotta get the harder ones.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't think of it that way. Yeah. Oh, well.
No, I like this challenge. Come at me next episode.
I'll try. I'll try, Bob. I'll try. Yeah. Well, for those keeping count, Bob's managed to find two different scenarios for both the lines that have been questioned. So good job, Bob. But Bob, so Lilandra tells Professor X that returning to be with his family is him going to enter a black hole. Is this why you don't come back to Georgia more often, Bob? Does it feel like you're going into a black hole?
No, Matt, the reason I don't come back to Georgia is not because I'm afraid of black holes, but because in Joe Biden's economy, tickets are very expensive to fly.
Oh, man. Dag. Well, I just felt someone on the writing staff...
If we were a video podcast, Matt, I would flash up that picture of Joe Biden with laser eyes. Yeah. I did it.
I'm just thinking, Bob, that...
And yes, liberals, I know that the president has limited control over the economy. I'm making a joke.
You mean there's more than just one person controlling everything, Bob? You mean we all do this to ourselves?
There's a very small, exclusive class called capitalists who control everything, Matt, and extract money from the rest of us to make profit. Yes, that is what I'm describing.
Who the hell, Green Arrow, get on your microphone? No, I'm just thinking, Bob, that line alone, though, makes me think that someone on the writers, one of the writers for the show just does not like their family. And they just
it does seem based off Bo DeMeo's statement about his intentions for the show and childhood memories and what have you. It does. Some of this stuff is personal to the queer experience or the gay experience, but some of it is also just more general themes that a lot of people might relate to. So yeah, it's interesting.
All right, Bob, I'll tell you one thing that threw me off in this episode. Forge using magic. What the hell? You know my opinions on magic. This is stupid. You want to know what that magic looks like? That magic looks like the stuff in the MCU. Same circular crap, same little red, orange lines. It looks just like the stuff Doctor Strange uses. So guess what they're trying to do?
I like the Doctor Strange movies, man, especially the second one.
Oh, I'm just telling you, Bob. They're trying this X-Men into the MCU. That's what I'm trying to make you angry about. Very visual connection.
It doesn't bother me as much as The Watcher last episode, though. Yeah, but The Watcher last episode, Matt, that was a true horror. Yeah.
Bob, when does Forge use magic? I've never seen him use magic. He had a book that he was using, and he has to cast a spell. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Forge use magic before. I think that's new, but The X-Men sometimes do go into this Cheyenne mysticism, right? And again, because Forge is Cheyenne. I have no idea how it actually reflects Cheyenne cosmology or Cheyenne stories. It well might not reflect them very much at all, but they do act sometimes like characters like the Adversary come from that tradition. And in a certain way, given Forge's mindset, it sort of makes sense. There have been arcs where Tony Stark has to get involved in magic, even though he's a more secular scientist type guy. So in that way, it sort of makes sense to me.
Yeah, I just, it wasn't my favorite thing. I always think of Forge as the technology guy. He can make whatever out of whatever, and it's awesome. That's a cool power. Then he pulls out his magic book.
Magic is just working out your will.
Anyway, my opinions on magic, wasn't extremely happy about it, but it is what it is. And now, I did read Life, Death, the trade paperback, Bob. He didn't use magic in that. There was no magic.
No, he didn't. No magic, at least on Forge's end.
But he has a really cool house that he can turn the ground invisible and the sky invisible. Mm-hmm. And Bob, he can just take you to Vietnam in his house. No questions.
He's got a skyscraper holodeck, man.
He's got a Vietnam simulator in one of his rooms.
I mean, what better way to work out your PTSD?
And yes, folks, this is the actual Life, Death ish comic. If you have not read it, this does.
Beloved classic X-Men story. Yeah. I guess to switch back to the Xavier story, I did think it was interesting that Xavier thinks that Gladiator and Magneto have similar mindsets. I don't know, it's just an interesting comparison. I don't have much else to say about it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even thought of Magneto and Gladiator in the same sentence or even thought of them in the same room. So that's interesting. Yeah. How would a fight between them go down? I mean, it's Superman versus Magneto.
Yeah. Well, see, Matt, the key to Gladiator, I don't know if you know this. Do you know where his powers come from?
It's whatever he puts his mind to or something weird, right?
It's close. They come from his self-confidence.
Oh.
So the key to fighting Gladiator is you got to neg him really good. That's the key.
Is that why that stupid haircut?
Good start, Matt. Good start. You might be able to beat Gladiator yet. If I were me, I would go after him for being a bad dad and for leaving his son in care of Wolverine and Wolverine and the X-Men. Those are the doubts and anxieties I would play on. So we do see another visual that I wanted to flag, which maybe is similar to something in Life, Death, the comic. You've read it more recently than I, so you'd have to say, but we have the Adversary's feather floating in Storm's lightning, which I thought was a very sick visual.
Yeah, I don't remember that visual. I will say my favorite thing that the Adversary does in this episode is the head spinning like an owl.
That's so cool.
He kept rotating his head in a weird way, and it just throws you off. It just any transformation that the Adversary made into one of the X-Men, I give the artist props for that because they did really just amazing details for the scary monster versions of Rogue, Cyclops, and Wolverine.
Nice. I have a question about owls that I don't think I've asked you on air before. Matt, have you ever seen an owl's legs before?
Oh, the talons?
No.
Not the talons?
Their legs.
No, I haven't seen their legs.
So there were pictures floating around on social media a couple years ago of it was some owl in a sanctuary or wildlife refuge or something. And
I just Googled it. What is wrong with this? Okay, folks, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not driving in a vehicle and you have access to anything, just type into Google owl legs and you'll get the best laugh of the day.
Just to describe it for those who are driving, owls basically have big chicken legs, or at least most owls do, I think, but they're totally covered by their feathers, obviously. But if you lift up their feathers, you see these just absurd chicken legs, and it really undermines the owl as a beacon of evil.
Yeah, I just had to text my wife and was, look up owl legs. This is amazing.
So, I mean, Storm does manage to overcome the adversary, and she does it pretty well. But another option would have just been to send a gust of wind to blow up those feathers. Everybody get a laugh at it, the adversary's chicken legs.
Yeah, that would have done it. Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder what Gladiator's legs look like.
I mean, he's got to wear that full bodysuit for a reason, man. He's got to maintain his self-belief. Yeah. I was going to ask... I don't remember the Life Death episodes that strongly. They're classics. They're never really my favorite. But the adversary doesn't really factor into those at all, right?
That's, no.
He's more from Fall of the Mutants.
Correct.
And some other late 80s Claremont. Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
he's not really in the Life Death.
No, there's not. Yeah. So if you go and read Life Death, the trade paperback, you're going to get two stories. You're going to get Life Death Part 1, Life Death Part 2. Life Death Part 1 focuses on the relationship between Forge and Storm.
In the skyscraper.
In the really weird skyscraper that has mazes and crazy stuff in it.
And this is right after she's gotten shot with Forge's anti-mutation gun on the Mississippi River.
Correct. While trying to rescue Rogue.
And then the second one is she's back in Kenya, is that right?
Correct. And there's a whole just story about how she helps this child, she helps bring this child back to life. She helps this child live. A woman is giving birth to a child, and she's the one who brings the child into the world. But then,
does she already have her powers back in Life Death 2, or is that about her getting her powers back, or does she just not have them?
I think she gets them back. It's never really clear, and I want to say that none of Storm getting her powers back is ever really clear to me. Even in the episode, I think...
Somebody was making the connection online that in that way Storm is like Gladiator, because it does seem her powers are a function of her self-regard or self-belief.
Correct. And I think that's what it boiled down to. And then that issue where she's in Kenya, she just comes back. And by that time, she goes back with the X-Men and she's good to go.
When I think there was some speculation, speaking more of this episode than of the Life Death comics, that whatever Forge did with her in the first episode worked. It just took her changing her mindset to reuse the powers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and in my brain, that's what I'm keeping in. I keep that in check. I'm thinking, okay, I know Forge tried something. He said it didn't work, but she was just afraid to use her powers. Mm-hmm. I guess because she wanted to accept that she was now no longer a mutant. I don't know. There's a lot going on there.
One other question about the Life Death trade. So is there anything in that besides the two Life Death stories?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so when you read it, there's also a story called Body Shop where Wolverine teams up with it's the little girl Katie Powers.
Does that have Lady Deathstrike and the Reavers?
Yeah, Lady Deathstrike gets her new techno powers or whatever that allow her to. She didn't have the technology piece involved with it. You remember she gets her powers in this episode from the Reavers. She did in that episode of the series, the 92 series.
The prelude to the Phoenix Saga. Is that Uncanny X-Men 205?
Yes, it's got that cover with Wolverine.
Yeah. That is the Wounded Wolf story. What else is in that collection?
So you have the first three stories are great. I mean, they're classic Claremont type stuff. You're going to enjoy it. The art's amazing. It's got that 80s aesthetic, those hard lines. Love it. But then you get this issue about Dazzler. It's Uncanny X-Men number 214. And it's where they all take on one of the Marauders, who has somehow managed to get herself inside some choker.
Malice.
Malice.
Yeah.
That's how her powers work.
She lives in the gym on that choker.
Yeah, I thought
it's got Lila Cheney in it, too. Yeah, that's a fun issue.
I thought it was dumb, but Bob liked it.
So it's just all Barry Windsor Smith doing X-Men art.
Yeah. And then there's another issue. It's X-Men number 53 is randomly in there about Blastar, the Rage of Blastar.
But it's just all Barry Windsor Smith's art.
Very, very different style from the 60s to the 80s.
Matt, all this builds up to we get Storm getting her confidence back, getting her powers back, and getting her Dave Cockrum clothes back. So she's back in the original Storm outfit.
Yeah, this uniform is so classic and just awesome. Like, I don't think we've seen her in this outfit since in animation, since Pride of the X-Men, which was that pilot of that unproduced show from the 80s, which was... This is the classic outfit. I love it. I think it's a great choice on their part to go with this. I'm hoping they make an action figure. Keep my fingers crossed. But how does her hair grow back, Bob? How does her hair grow back? Magic
through the power of friendship, Matt.
Yeah, I want whatever I want for myself. Whatever Storm did to get her hair to come back, that was pretty cool.
I hadn't considered your mercenary interest in this.
Yeah, moment. It was.
Oh man, I guess to switch to the Xavier story. So we have Xavier trying to force tolerance on the Shi'ar Empire by chaining up everybody psychically in a classroom in the astral plane. And we've talked on our show X-Men 92 versus Young Justice before about Professor Xavier's bondage fetish, specifically the time that he locked Sabretooth in a duplicate of his floating wheelchair. That was a weird time. But here we have Xavier put an apple in Deathbird's mouth, and I think the animators were having fun that day because it looked a lot like a ball gag.
Yeah, and it's Laurent's sister, which makes it even weirder, so...
Oh yeah, I didn't even, man, a lot of brother sister stuff these two episodes. I didn't even consider.
And there is a comment earlier on in the episode that I caught about Xavier can be a dog later. And I'm thinking, a dog? What? No, I don't know what that means. I don't know. That's their kinky stuff. I'm not going to.
We'll just keep going. Yeah. We'll just keep going. So in the classroom scene, there's a mention of an evolutionary war. And that was a late 80s Marvel Annuals crossover, and I've never read it in full, but as I understand it, it's about the High Evolutionary versus Apocalypse.
Oh, okay. I mean, that'd be a pretty interesting match, knowing what we know about High Evolutionary.
And then we have the big appearance, right? I think the thing that'll most stand out about the Xavier side of the episode is Xavier realizes that Gambit died, and he sees a giant skeletal Gambit on the astral plane.
Yeah, is this sparking any rumors, Bob?
Well, I think the rumors were already going. We just didn't bring them up when we were talking about episode 5. But this, I think, supercharges them because the skeletal Gambit looks a lot like Gambit did in the late 90s when he was Apocalypse's Horseman of Death. Or actually, I think that's the early aughts. But yeah, it looks a lot like Gambit may become one of Apocalypse's Horsemen.
Bob, I want to tell you something that I think is really, really going to be cool.
What's that?
What if Apocalypse creates his Horsemen of Death, creates his four horsemen from the dead mutants of Genosha.
That and would make sense.
Banshee becomes one of them.
Yeah, Banshee has been a horseman before. I want to say Callisto and Marrow have been horsemen or horsewomen before too. I'm not as sure about that.
You've got four strong characters right there that could be awesome horsemen that have all appeared in previous episodes, with the exception of Marrow. But yeah. I mean, you're talking, I think that's awesome they went that direction.
Do you think they would do that in the back half of this season, or do you think they would set that up as the cliffhanger for season two?
Well, they keep showing Cable shooting Apocalypse in the opening crawl, so I don't know. Yeah. I mean, maybe we'll get it this season or next. But they love Apocalypse, and they love Mr. Sinister. So,
and the rate this show moves, probably they would go ahead and do it, because this show really moves fast, right?
Yeah, we've moved through 20 years of X-Men in two episodes. So,
yeah, I've even seen some people online complaining about it, and I'm just... On the one hand, I get it, but on the other hand, come on, man. Do you want them to do a 20-episode crossover for Inferno?
I wanted Grant Morrison's X-Men issues, each issue being a separate episode.
Well, actually, is that what they want? When you put it like that, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, that would be cool, but yeah. not for this. All right, going back though, Bob, I don't really have a strong opinion about Gambit being a Horseman of Death. But like I said in the previous episode, I do not want them to cheapen his death by bringing him back too soon.
I agree with it. I agree with that. And I don't really want him to bring him back at all. But if they are going to bring him back, I would much rather him come back as a horseman than have just Cable or the Watcher somehow undo what's been done.
So, Bob, big reveal at the end of this episode.
What's the big reveal, Matt?
We discover that Mr. Sinister was apparently the one behind the mutant massacre.
Although it does seem maybe there's somebody behind Mr. Sinister too, possibly. But yeah, for right now, it's Mr. Sinister is our big bad.
And this is confirmed because Bolivar Trask had to be used to activate the Sentinel, which is straight out of Grant Morrison's.
Got to use that Trask bloodline. Mm-hmm. Can I just quote? I mean, this is an unfortunate line with what's going on in with what Israel is doing in Gaza right now. But still, there's a very funny line from the Grant Morrison opening issue where Cassandra Nova turns up to one of the Trask who's a dentist. And she's just, give up dentistry, Mr. Trask. You have a promising future in genocide.
That was a classic line from that series. I love that. That's when I knew that Grant Morrison's X-Men was going to be different. Those scenes, there's something weird going on here. This is not the normal. So do you want to go through the other options, Bob? Probably why they didn't go along with these characters. There were a couple of other options for who we thought could be behind the whole mutant massacre.
Yeah, so Apocalypse could be and may still be, but they're playing a longer game with it if Apocalypse is manipulating Sinister. Could have been Moira, but honestly, who wants to get into Moira's life powers right now? Maybe they'll do that in the future.
I mean, with the pace they're going by, they may as well. They could just throw everything out there.
And honestly, that is something it is an interesting challenge, seeing them simplify Moira. They've simplified Inferno, or they've simplified the mutant massacre would be very interesting. I would say, too, I actually, as much as I like the Krakoa era, the Moira heel turn was not handled especially well in the Krakoa era, I think. And so I do think there's a lot of potential for this or for some other adaptation to do a Moira heel turn, but make it work better, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. And they'd have to really streamline it to make everybody be able to follow along in an animated series style. So, but just the idea of Moira with that power was amazing when it first dropped with Hickman's run.
Yeah. I talked about last episode about how I might have fought Exodus, but given Exodus's welcome, his enjoyment of Krakoa wasn't him. And I thought about Sebastian Shaw briefly, but Shaw goes in for schemes, but I don't think he goes in for schemes quite what we saw.
This is too big, I think, for it's too out there and big for him.
He had a good power base on Genosha, and he wouldn't just destroy it. You would see him manipulating within Genosha.
Right. Yeah. He's more behind the scenes manipulation more so than bringing in a giant robot. People thinking maybe, Bob, evil Professor X.
Oh, okay. So either the literal evil Professor X from before the Phoenix Saga, or Professor X's evil twin, Cassandra Nova. Huh?
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot you could do with that. I mean, so many different ways they could go with it. Those were all options. I can't think of anyone else off the top of my head. We did mention Strife at one point, just because of Cable.
Oh, we did. We did. I forgot that we mentioned, in our aborted recording before we were both too racked by sobs. We talked about Strife, which, honestly, I want to see X-Men 97 do Strife. That would be sick.
Yeah, we had to have a funeral for a friend.
Who's now our messiah, Gambit.
All right, Bob.
Matt, one last question. If Gambit comes back as the Horseman of Death, are we still going to worship him?
Well, yeah, Bob. I mean, do people still worship Jesus? He came back from
the dead. As far as I understand it, Jesus resurrected his good Jesus. He didn't resurrect his bad Jesus.
Oh, it depends, Bob. It depends on what Apocalypse's actual, his game plan actually is.
Did I ever tell you about the book about bad Jesus?
No, there's a book about bad Jesus. What?
There was a crime novel that came out in the 2000s that I never actually read. But I did read a review of it on a really crappy libertarian site that I read at the time. I'm better now. I'm not a libertarian, and I've healed psychically and cognitively.
Bob just wanted to carry all his guns around with him.
I did used to love guns. That always was my favorite thing. But the one thing I do cherish that I learned from this libertarian site is of an existence of a crime novel in the 2000s where there was a character named Bad Jesus. And even though I've never read the book, the review has always stuck with me. And the one thing I remember is the line from the book that the book review quote, novel review quotes, "Good Jesus made the blind see. Bad Jesus does the opposite."
But the blind already don't see, so is that gonna change?
I know. It's so mystifying. Does he make the seeing blind? What does bad Jesus actually do? It's so unclear. But
you don't have to have powers to do that. You can make it. I mean, you can poke people in the eye and make them blind. You don't have to have magic.
You don't mean miracle powers.
That makes no sense.
So what I'm saying is, Matt, good Gambit steals and makes things blow up. Bad Gambit does the opposite.
He gives people things that don't blow up. What, he gives gifts? Okay.
It's the meme that's, "Go away, rat, you vile carrier of plague. And but I brought you a gift." Oh, that's nice. What's in the gift? Plague.
Maybe this is how Santa Claus came to be. I don't know. Maybe our Gambit thing here could explain the whole Santa Claus piece. Well, All right, Bob.
Maybe Gambit will just become the Marvel Universe Santa Claus. He'll ascend. He'll go from Gambit. He'll sacrifice himself. He'll be the Horseman of Death. He'll be healed by Rogue's love. He'll become Marvel Santa Claus.
He just gives everyone gifts that don't explode.
All right, Matt. Who's your character of the week?
All right, character. That was the weirdest tangent, Bob. Character of the week, Gladiator. Because honestly, this is the only time I've seen Gladiator actually seem cool. Even in the earlier run, they didn't do him justice with his powers. Here, I think they really showed off what Gladiator could do.
I've liked Gladiator and other things, but I'm glad you enjoyed him in this one. I'll give it to Storm, man. Her getting her Dave Cockrum outfit, oh man, it's beautiful. I liked it a lot. Although I do want to give it close number two to Deathbird and extend my hopes that in season two, Deathbird and Bishop hook up. That would be great.
Yeah, I think this may be the last time we see Deathbird, Bob, but it's just.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet.
And she made one. She made one appearance in the original run. So,
I mean, it's a safe bet. But I live in hope, Matt. Yeah. Just I hope that I'll get a Legion of Superheroes cartoon.
It'll happen one day, Bob.
And I hope Bad Gambit will do the opposite. Whatever that is.
All right, Bob. Well.
All right. This has been X-Men 97 as covered by Uncanny Treks. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Join us on Patreon for our takes on X-Men 92 and Young Justice. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening, Bob. Way to do the opposite.